Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the House Committee on Revenue. This afternoon, we're going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2127. We excuse Paul Warner. We'll be a little bit late. We recognize also that Mazin is recovering, and we're glad to get some good news back on him. And so in Paul's absence, Elizabeth Martin Marr is here today to help us get started. Elizabeth?
Chairman Butler and committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin Mahar and the Legislative Revenue Office. So I'm just, since this is kind of our first bill on unemployment insurance, taxes, and things, I've kind of written you a pretty long background here in your staff major summary. So I'm just going to kind of talk through some of that just to touch on some main points about these insurance taxes, which are going to get changed in different components in House Bill 2127. So basically, under current law, employers pay both a federal and state unemployment payroll taxes, and these two taxes are then deposited into a state trust fund in the federal treasury and are used solely for paying then unemployment insurance benefits. In 1991, Oregon created the State Unemployment Compensation Benefit Reserve Fund, or many times just called the Benefit Reserve Fund. And this currently has a balance of $234 million. Now, this Benefit Reserve Fund is created in order to pay unemployment benefits to claimants, but it is only to be drawn down unless the state trust fund goes broke. So basically, this is a last resort. And what happens with this $234 million is those interest earnings off of that money from the Benefit Reserve Fund are then used to finance Department of Employment various employment services. So this is really a portion of their supplemental administrative fund. So under current law, what you have are eight different tax rate schedules, and they're going to depend on basically the balance in the trust fund and the estimated cost of unemployment benefits. Each September, then, the Employment Department determines which of these eight tax schedules will go into effect for the following calendar year. In order to keep, then, our reserves that we need an appropriate level in the trust fund in order to ensure solvency. So basically, in 2005, the tax schedule that will be in effect is Schedule 5, and this is with a fund adequacy rate ratio of 125%, but not less than 145%. I think we're roughly at about 133%. That's why we're falling into category Schedule 5. Now, recognize that each one of these schedules all have different tax rates. Okay, they begin at different levels. So tax Schedules 1, 2, and 3... 1, 2, and 3 reduce tax rates to bring the trust fund level down, where the higher tax schedules, 5, 6, 7, and 8, increase tax rates to build then the trust fund level to cover benefit costs that we would need for our next economic downturn period. Now, tax Schedule 4 really is the long-term goal that we're trying to achieve with solvency for our tax fund balance. And basically, that is reflecting a trust fund balance of 150% of the estimated unemployment insurance claim cost for 18 months of payment benefits.
Is that statutory, Elizabeth?
Chairman Butler, no, I don't think that is, but we can ask the Employment Department. Okay. But this is something that they've had various studies. They've looked at different states and things, and this is what they've arrived at to be the amount, 150% of the estimated claims. Now, basically, under current law, what we have here in Oregon is we have two formulas, and they are used to achieve the solvency of the trust fund for future downturns. Basically, the first formula is called a 10-year high-cost formula. So basically, it's looking at the trust fund, and it's considering its solvency if we have 18 months of benefits that can be paid at a level that corresponds to the highest unemployment benefit period for 12 consecutive months over 10 years. So basically, it's looking at the 12-month period in which you had the highest unemployment benefits paid out over 10 years. Then the second formula, which is what we're changing in House Bill 2127, is called the 7% insured unemployment formula. The trust fund is then considered solvent if you have 18 months of benefits, can be paid at a level where the insured employment rate is 7%. And this formula that produces then each year, the Employment Department calculates the unemployment benefits under both of these scenarios, and basically it's choosing the higher unemployment benefit formula. So basically since 1994, we've been using this 7% formula, and it has been the higher of the two formulas for the past 10 years. So basically what we're doing now with House Bill 2127 is we're going to be lowering this formula to 5.6% due to a study that the Employment Department has had over the past year. So the other important point to recognize here is that under current law, new employers are assigned a base rate, okay, until they have sufficient experience to qualify for an experience rate-based tax rate. So basically, the unemployment base rates range from 2.7% on up to 3.5% under current law. And this base rate is then dependent on what schedule we're in, depending on our amount of trust fund money that we have, as well as our anticipated unemployment benefits. Now, just so everyone's clear, that's Table A. That's the short table that we have in the bill. And then the experienced employers, they have a graduated tax rate with more different schedules, and it's going to depend then on the amount of unemployment insurance claims that each employer has made and their total taxable wages. And so that's what you see basically when you're seeing there in like Section 2, you're seeing a new schedule here. It's now going to be renamed Schedule B, but it was Schedule A. But basically that's what that's doing. It's showing you all the graduated rates there. And basically that goes from about 0.5% all the way up to 5.4%. And a benefit, and that what each year happens is for each employer, a benefits ratio is calculated, which is summing up all the unemployment benefits that have been chargeable to that employer and dividing that by the employer's taxable wages for that year. This benefit ratio is really critical to then determining which tax rate each employer has to pay. So basically, if an employer has a lot of unemployment, benefits are being paid out, then they're going to pay a higher tax rate. But if they aren't laying off many people, then they're going to have a lower tax rate. So that's what these schedules are basically indicating. Now, under current law, there's two groups then of tax of these graduated tax rates for the experienced employers. And there's a Schedule H, which is under ORS 357.439, and there's a Schedule A, which is ORS 357.462. So Section 2 of your bill is amending then the 657.462, the Schedule A, and making it Schedule B. Okay, and then your Schedule 8 changes then are in the back here on Section 6, page 10. So you get the idea. We have two different rate schedules, but Schedule H then, which is going to get changed to Schedule C in this bill, but Schedule H have tax rates that are in effect for the first quarter of the odd-numbered year. So this Schedule H is not used very often, okay? It's just used for one quarter, odd number years, and that's to put funds into the wage security fund. And basically, the Schedule A is what is used under current law all the other quarters. And the difference then in rates is that we see that Schedule H is 0.03% lower than the Schedule A tax rate. So basically, that shows you that there's just Employment Department has estimated that this is how much they need for their wage security fund, and they can achieve that in one quarter by having a little lower rate schedule than what they have under current law for the other quarters of the fiscal year.
So an employer would actually calculate under Schedule H for one quarter only, and then for the other three quarters during the calendar reporting year, report under Schedule A.
Right, but it's even in all even numbered years too. So this just happens once every other year.
Okay.
Just odd numbered years you use Schedule H. So just so everyone's clear, you know what you're seeing in House Bill 2127 looks quite. I mean, we've got 35 pages here, but a lot of it is repetition because you've got Schedule H and then you've got Schedule A, and then you're changing them both, and you're reducing them both by 0.09%. So basically, just so everyone's clear, too, what we have under current law and under our current system, Oregon has never experienced any chronic insolvency as far as their state trust fund. So that's the good news. And during the 2001-03 recession, a lot of states had to borrow money and things from the federal government in order to meet their state trust fund solvency, and Oregon was not in that boat. So we have had enough funds in order to be able to pay the unemployment claims. And one thing, so everyone's clear too, I gave you a report here. It's called The Role of the Tax Fund and the Proposals for the Modifications in the Unemployment Insurance Tax System in Oregon. And the Employment Department, Ahmad, one of their staff members has done a great job of just outlining, you know, the various components and then also some of the trends. So, like, on page 3 here is a nice graph of the unemployment insurance tax fund activities and what kind of an effect it's had on the total amount that, you know, total amount of taxes collected in the fund and the benefits that were paid out. So this is really the basis on which we have House Bill 2127 are the estimates and stuff that were made by Ahmad, by the Employment Department. So basically, let me go through some of the key components of House Bill 2127. As I just mentioned, we're lowering the unemployment tax rates paid by employers under these different schedules, under Schedule A and under Schedule H. It's being reduced by 0.09% for all the tax rates except for the highest tax rate, which is 5.4%. And another component of, and what you're getting from this is then changing that formula, like we were talking about, the 7% rate formula will now be reduced to 5.6% rate formula. That's what basically these lowering of the rates are doing. Lowering it by that, so that would be our target then, not 7% anymore, but 5.6%. So then other component of this is we're reducing the rounding multiple for determining the average annual wage from $1,000 is what it was being rounded to $100. Well, this will basically increase taxes or reduce taxes a little bit for employers. It is also then reducing that first year, those unemployment tax rates by a larger amount than 0.09%, which is for the experienced taxpayers. So it reduces it by 0.7% for the first two categories, 0.6 for the third group, 0.5 for the fourth group, 0.3 for the fifth, and 0.2 for the other 6 through 8 categories. And then again with Schedule H, like we just talked about, used in odd years, just one quarter, that is being reduced by 0.09%. But the important point to recognize here with House Bill 2127, even though I've just been talking about all these various reductions in the payroll tax rates in the schedule, what you also have is now, even though we reduced all the schedules 0.09%, but we're also having a new... I won't say new, but it's you've got a 0.09% of payroll tax calculated the same way as the other payroll taxes. It'll be earmarked for the Employment Department to be put to their Supplemental Employment Department Administrative Fund. So basically, under current law, they are getting their money for their administrative funds, in particular from the interest off of that benefit reserve fund, where there's $234 million. Now what they're doing is they're going to be earmarking a portion of the tax the taxes that would be going to unemployment insurance compensation, and they're going to be earmarking it to their administrative fund. So they call it the CDAF fund. So that's an important distinction. It will add some security to how much they're going to be getting in this CDAF fund, these funds, as far as the interest that have been earned off of the $234 million has been dropping for the past couple years.
So the CDAF would now be funded out of the regular contributions
that's
made by employers.
Chairman Butler, that's correct. So that's an important distinction. And then what's going to happen is we're going to be repealing then this unemployment compensation, this benefit reserve fund, after January 30th of 2008. So like I said, that fund originally had $234 million. It was created in 91. That's going to go away because they're not going to be taking the interest from it anymore. They're going to be taking a portion of the unemployment insurance taxes. So, and so everyone's clear too, the amount that is going to a business, the amount that businesses are paying under these schedules is not changed. Okay, we're lowering the tax rates by 0.09%, but then we're adding 0.09% that is going to be earmarked for the administrative fund. Okay, so as far as the total amount businesses pay is not changed. But what has changed has been that formula as far as what we're targeting. So then what we're going to be doing is putting more employers into a lower rate schedule. Our schedule currently, like I was just saying, we're on schedule 5 as far as the, you know, amount of fund adequacy percentage. We're in schedule 5. But this is going to move us down to like schedule 3 by 2007 and 8. So this is where you're seeing then the reductions then in taxes for businesses. But I think on the surface, you kind of look at this bill and you think, well, there's all these various rate reductions. That must mean where, that's where the revenue reduction is coming from. But really, we're, the total business taxes that are paid in the schedules is really not changed. But you're earmarking it for different things. You've now got an administrative fund where before you didn't have that. Now, another adjustment that's made is just a lowering the number of weeks in the formula from 3.3 to 3, and as far as, again, changing that 7% insured formula. It applies then, all of these changes in the rates and the structure applies to tax years beginning January 1st, 2007. And basically what's going to happen in the future, too, is it specifies that monies that are in this Supplemental Employment Department administrative funds that are in excess of 150% of the amount collected for the first quarter of the previous even-numbered years shall be transferred to the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund. So basically it's just trying to put in place, you know, some kind of limit on the amount that can actually accrue in that supplemental administrative fund, and whatever reserves above 150% are going to go then into back to the trust fund, the unemployment trust fund in Washington, D.C. And then it just specifies the time periods of requiring those various transfers. So now when you look at the revenue impact, that's the bottom tables there. What you have first is you've got tax reduction components, and those, again, they arise, one, from adjusting the 7% formula and reducing those down to 5.6%, and that's going to lead to a reduction then of really only $31 million in 2006-07, and that's because of the timing and when this basically gets started. And but on an annual basis, you can see that in 2007-09, it's reduced $91 million, and then this is $61 million in 2008-09. And then you also have the rounding issue as far as rounding that wage and, again, kind of changing the formula that's used. And so that will reduce revenues also by $2 million in 2006-07, $8.3 million in 2007-09, and $7.4 million in 2008-09. So and then the final one is then rounding changes due to the taxable wage rate, which are pretty small there, and 0.6 million, 2.8 million, and 6.5 million. So for a total there of reduction in taxes of a negative 33.7 million in 2006-07, 102 million in 2007-09, and 75 million in 2008-09. And so, again, this is really what you're seeing when you're adjusting the 7% formula is you're moving us into lower schedules. So we no longer would be on a schedule of, like, Schedule 5. You'd be down to Schedule 3, and those have lower tax rates to begin with. And then on the second page here, this just shows you some of the changes that are going on with the CDF funding, but then also additional interest that is being earned. So what you have, like we just were saying, you have now the unemployment taxes that originally were going into the Unemployment Compensation Fund and going to the State Trust Fund are now being redirected to CDAF under this bill. And so then that's a reduction in the Unemployment Trust Fund of $9.6 million and then $28.2 million in 2007-08 and then $29.8 million in 2008-09. Now, there is also going to be additional earned interest now. Now, we talked about how the benefits fund was earning interest, and that was what was used for CDAF. but what you're also going to be seeing is a higher unemployment insurance trust fund because you're going to be spending down CDAP, the $234 million, so they're not going to have to take the funds from there. You are also going to be seeing then a transfer of funds that are not going to need to be made, in particular these READ Act funds. And so having that additional trust fund balance be larger is going to allow you to have additional interest earned on that fund. And also there's a difference in the interest rates between the amount of interest that could be earned at the benefit funds at our current $234 million is in that fund, how much we can earn with that versus how much interest we can earn in the unemployment trust fund. So basically the trust fund can earn higher interest, and that's what you're seeing there. So basically it's additional interest income at $1.4 million in 2006-07, 07-08, $13 million, and 08-09, $16 million. Now the READ Act funds are again... This is the Employment Department can go into more detail about this, but basically it's a fund that is currently being used in order to pay for some of their programs that are in place. And so they take each year a portion of the unemployment interest trust fund dollars and put them in the READ Act fund and then use them for other purposes. So this is something that they won't have to do now under House Bill 2127. So that's, again, additional capital and additional funds that will be retained in the unemployment interest trust fund, and then that will allow them to increase the balance on that trust fund. So basically, with all of those changes from the reductions in the taxes, we see then an overall reduction of $41.9 million in 2006-07, $103.2 million in 07-08, and $74 million in 2008-09.
And I'll need a copy. I don't, for some reason, I did not end up with a copy of the Revenue Office Revenue Impact.
Maybe I have two, Mr. Chair. Maybe
you have two.
No, I don't. I only put those right in front of me.
No, you're fine. Mm. You get an extra? Thank you. There you go. Thank you very much. Everybody's got extras from me.
I didn't
Elizabeth, with regard to the CDAP, the excess of 150% of the amount collected in the first quarter of previously even number of years shall be transferred to the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund. That's in Washington, D.C., you said?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that gets moved out. The excess of the funds that we use to operate go back into the federal unemployment trust fund?
Chairman Butler, no, I mean that is all lumped together. I mean you have both the federal taxes and the correct.
Okay.
And Oregon taxes go together into one state trust fund in Washington D.C.
Okay. But that's our trust money.
Correct.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
And that says that basically I think it's section 15 here about that transferring.
Okay. All right. Other questions of staff before we... yes, Representative Berger?
Elizabeth, if you wouldn't mind, go through briefly again so I understand. The interest used to be used to pay for what? It is now being paid for out of the fund itself, and so the interest is going back into the fund, and you've made projections on interest earnings... Based on what? I guess those are my questions.
Okay.
In a nutshell.
Chairman Butler and Representative Berger, really with the interest earned, what we have under current law is the Benefits Reserve Trust Fund, which has $234 million in it. And that is what is earning interest. But that is at a lower interest rate than what they're earning interest at on the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund in Washington, D.C.
Got it.
Okay. So there's a difference in interest there. Now what we're doing with this bill is we're going to be lowering then this fund. And we're basically making this fund, the Benefits Reserve Fund, go away. Okay, so then we're not going to have $234 million in it. We're going to be paying unemployment benefits out of that, paying it down, and then it'll go away. And then we won't have, but what happens is you have additional reserves then in the unemployment trust fund reserves from, for one thing, paying those unemployment checks out of this other fund and not the unemployment.
And that will build.
And then also you have like these READ Act funds that aren't going to have to be moved out of the unemployment trust fund each year, which they currently are, in order to be able to then spend it in different programs here. So the READ Act funds will be retained in the unemployment insurance trust fund.
Okay. Because we're not using it for administration.
That's right.
Okay. Other questions, Elizabeth, before we bring forward? Let's ask Deborah Lincoln to please come forward, as well as David Bridson from the Oregon Employment Division, the Oregon Employer Council. Debbie?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Debbie Lincoln. I'm the director of the Oregon Employment Department, and I appreciate the opportunity to come talk to you about House Bill 2127. Elizabeth has done a really nice job going through a very complex taxing system in fairly short order. What I would like to do is direct you to the handout that I've given you. It's a four-pager. I don't want to repeat what Elizabeth said, but if we just go section by section through the handout, perhaps you can ask the questions about the different elements of the bill as we get to them, and I can respond to some of the issues that may have come up. First of all, House Bill 2127 does three things. It lowers business taxes by about 12% over the next 4 years. It gives us a tool to help attract new businesses to Oregon, and it stabilizes the funding that we have for services to business and job seekers. As Elizabeth discussed, the main piece of this bill in terms of lowering taxes is a change in how much money we keep in the state unemployment trust account. That fund is charted on the second page, the Mauer Mountain graph here. If you'll take a look at that, what we intend to do is simply not collect the amount of taxes we would have without this proposal. The statute is very clear, very fiscally responsible about forward funding and self-balancing the trust fund so that we ensure solvency. As Elizabeth mentioned, a number of states went insolvent with this recession. Idaho just increased its taxes by 12.5% and cut benefits by 5%. California, Texas, Illinois, New York, South Carolina all went bankrupt this past recession and had to borrow at market rates in order to pay their benefits. Our trust fund is very, very solid and is not necessary to do that. And one reason is that because in the statute we have a benchmark formula that tells us how much we have to keep in that trust fund. That benchmark is demonstrated by the top dotted line on that graph. As we looked around the country and saw other states having a lot of trouble with their trust funds, we thought we ought to take a look at why we are in such good shape given how difficult our recession has been, and got the actuaries to working on how much money we really need to keep in the trust fund, and discovered that we really don't need to keep the benchmark as high as it has been, and so we are proposing to drop it to that second dotted line, and that will alone save nearly $200 million over the next 4 years. That's the big piece, and that's in Section 7, page 26 of the bill. Can I ask if there are any questions on that piece of it?
Are there questions of Debbie's presentation thus far? Colleagues, will please proceed.
Okay. The second piece of it, then, is reducing new employer base rates. As with any insurance program, employers pay their taxes based on their experience, how many UI benefits they've had to pay out in the past. A new employer who doesn't have any experience is assigned a base rate until that employer develops some experience on which we can calculate a rate. The chart on that front page shows the 8 tax schedules. We're currently in Schedule 5. The current base rate is what new employers currently pay the current average rate is what all employer, the average of what all employers pay. And we are proposing to lower that current base rate to the amounts in the right column. So as you can see, new employers now pay 3.2%. Under this proposal, they would pay 2.9%. And as we drop into lower tax schedules, they pay less and less. That will save about $17 or $18 million then in the next 4 years, and again will give us a tool to attract new employers to Oregon. We do compete with, particularly with neighboring states on the level of our UI taxes, and I think this will give us a tool. On the second page, then, the third thing that we are planning to do is change the way we calculate the taxable wage base. Employers currently pay their unemployment taxes, their SUTA taxes, based on the first $27,000 of payroll, and above that, payroll isn't taxed. That $27,000, that taxable wage base, is adjusted every year when we figure out which tax schedule we need to be in, and it is all dependent on how much money we need in the state unemployment trust account. This year, for example, we didn't change. We didn't have to change. We left it at $27,000. A number of states, again, don't adjust their taxable wage base. California leaves theirs at $7,000, and that's one big reason why they bankrupted their trust fund this time, because they've never adjusted their taxable wage base for inflation or covered employment. So every year, again, we figure out what that should be. We calculate it based on an average annual weekly wage. In the chart on page 2, you'll see that the actual and projected base comes out to be 27,229. We then round it. Currently, we round it to the nearest $1,000 or $27,000. We propose to round it to the nearest $100 rather than $1,000, and simply by doing that, we save about $10 million over the next 4 years. But more importantly, we smooth out the incremental changes from year to year that businesses have to deal with. So that's the third piece. The fourth piece is stabilizing the revenue that supports services to business and job seekers. As I'm sure you know, the Employment Department provides a labor exchange function. We work with businesses to find the workforce they need to fill their jobs, and we work with people who need to get jobs, both UI claimants and anybody who's in search of a job, a new job or a better job, to get them matched up and to get them working. We also provide employers and policymakers with labor market information and a number of other services that are paid for out of two different funds. One, the federal government provides us funds to support these services. They're called Wagner-Peiser funds. You may have heard of them before. But they have been flat over the last 20 years. No cost of living, no inflation. So they are not sufficient to provide the kinds of services that we are asked to provide. The federal funds are down to about a third of the support level for our business services and job seeker services.
So, Deborah, you're telling us that the Wagner-Peiser has not increased for 20 years?
Mr. Chairman, that's right.
So it's flat
it's
in
flat.
Relationship to the amount we received 20 years ago is the same dollar amount you received this year.
Mr. Chairman, that's right.
Okay. I need to ask another question. The Wagner-Peiser, they were used originally intended for the administration?
Mr. Chairman, that's right.
Okay, what are the READ Act monies?
Mr. Chairman, the READ Act monies is come from a pot of money that is generated from the federal unemployment tax account. We're talking about two accounts. The one we're adjusting here is the state unemployment tax account, which is there to pay benefits and for no other purpose.
So READ Act can only be used for benefits?
Used for let me go on to the next. The federal unemployment tax account, which is what Congress controls, is the money that we get back from the federal government for administration of UI and the money that funds the Wagner-Peiser Act. Part of that money, the federal unemployment tax, once the administrative costs are covered, federal benefit extensions are covered, and the federal government uses some of that money, too, to loan to states who have bankrupted their trust funds. Then it all goes into a bucket called the REIT Act bucket, and supposedly that money is to be redistributed to states, back to states, on a regular basis. The federal government very rarely does that, but when it does, it generally allows us to use REIT Act either for to pay benefits or for administration of unemployment insurance and employment services. And those are the only two uses that the REIT Act money can be used for. In the early, about 3 years ago, we did get a REIT Act distribution. Oregon got $98 million. It has been sitting in the state unemployment tax account to provide benefits. But we have had to use some of that money and had it appropriated last session for this biennium, and would expect to use it next biennium to support administrative costs, because both Wagner-Peiser and our supplemental fund are not sufficient to cover our basic costs. So REIT Act can be used for administrative costs. We would rather it stay in the trust account to lower taxes and provide funds for benefits.
And so if it stays in the trust account, then, and that's the unemployment compensation trust account,
right,
stays in there, it's my understanding that we still get interest, but not as much interest as we would otherwise get?
No, Mr. Chairman, we would get interest, and actually more interest than we would otherwise get.
Okay. And do we know, relative to the total amount of CDAF monies and Wagner-Peiser, it is Wagner-Peiser and the REIT Act monies, do we know that that will be sufficient to take care of our operating and administrative costs in the future?
Mr. Chairman, without this proposal, they will not be sufficient. With this proposal, we wouldn't have to use REIT Act. It can stay in the SUTA to lower taxes and provide benefits, and we would have sufficient funds to support the services that we provide.
Then the
number four of the CDAP piece of this whole thing, let me just summarize it again very briefly. In the early 90s, the legislature, with the support of the business and labor communities, took a look at the funding and the level of services they wanted from us for labor exchange and labor market information, those kinds of everything except UI, and developed the benefit reserve fund funding model. What they did was take the $234 million that Elizabeth mentioned out of the SUTA, put it into a special fund called the benefit reserve fund, which was then invested by the state treasurer, and it was available only to pay UI benefits, but the interest on that fund is what went into our Supplemental Employment Department Administrative Fund, or CDAF, and so that money was available to support services. Through the 90s, we built up a fairly hefty ending balance, and then when the interest rates started dropping, the revenue income started dropping as well. We've been living off the ending balance for the last couple of years, and then in the 03 session, some of that ending balance was diverted to backfill the general fund. So the CDAF revenues are not sufficient, together with the Wagner-Peiser revenues, to support the business and labor exchange services. We're opposing to backfill with REIT Act, but of course those are one-time funds and they really shouldn't be used for that. They should be used for benefits. And so what we are proposing to do is simply transfer that funding mechanism to a more fiscally responsible funding mechanism. The benefit reserve fund gets less interest in the state treasury than if that $234 million were sitting in the federal treasury in the SUTA, in the state unemployment tax account. Feds just give us a better interest rate, significantly better. Benefit reserve fund is invested in short-term securities, and so it's not very safe. We would lose a lot of money if we had to spend it really fast. And again, the insurance revenue is not indexed to covered employment or inflation or cost of living. We're at the mercy of the insurance rates. So what we expect to do is spend down the benefit reserve fund by paying benefits out of it, get rid of it, and simply transfer that mechanism to the state unemployment tax account instead. By so doing, as Elizabeth mentioned, we can leave REIT Act in the SUTA, and we'll get a higher rate of interest, so that the impact of the amount of money going into CDAF will be negligible, about $250,000 total on the total of the $1.2 billion trust fund, and employers will see no changes in their taxes. It will be taken out without impact on the tax rates themselves. So that is our take on House Bill 2127. Summary, we would be lowering taxes by about $200 million over the next 4 years. We would drop from tax schedule 5, which is where we are now, down to 3 in 2008. And we would stabilize the funding, not increase it, but stabilize the funding that we have for business and employment services. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Debbie. Are there questions of Debbie? Representative Berger is recognized.
Just quickly, so I understand, Debbie, on page 2 of your handout on the taxable wage base,
mm-hmm.
your projections into the future are just that. They are recalculated every year. Is that my understanding? So 2006, 7, 8, 9, that just shows what rounding you do if the base were adjusted to that amount.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, yes, that's right.
Further questions of Debbie Lincoln? Yes, Representative Esquivel.
What is our administration cost in conjunction comparison to other states? And what are these services you keep talking about? And the third question is, with this taking and using this money that's actually from the employer's insurance fund, isn't that kind of like taxing employment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, I'd be glad to get you comparisons state to state. They vary very widely. Many states don't have a supplemental fund like we do and are trying to live on the Wagner-Pizer funds alone, so their administrative costs look lower, but then their services are not there either. Secondly, the kinds of services that I'm talking about are everything that we do except for the administration of unemployment insurance itself. So our work in helping businesses find employees, helping people get back to work, our work trying to get UI claimants off UI and back to work, a lot of the labor market information, everything that we do in our 47 field offices are the services that we're talking about here. So a wide variety of, and some of the business folks who are here today are prepared to talk about those services and what they get through this fund. The third question about taxing unemployment, this isn't a new tax. This is we have had this as a source of revenue for the last 12 or 15 years. We are simply changing the way we generate it. So it isn't a new tax. It's a change in the mechanism. The interest rate on the benefit reserve fund, had we not used it for this purpose, would have been part of the state unemployment trust account as well. So it's simply a transfer of the mechanism, and it, rather than a new tax on businesses, and will not have no impact on the taxes that a business person pays.
Representative Esquivel, responsive.
Well, yeah, but the only thing I'd have to ask then, how do you gauge your success?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel,
you're taking money from employers, putting it into programs, but how do you really gauge the success of that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, we have a number of performance measures and ways that we determine whether we are successful, including how many people get jobs after using our services, customer satisfaction, both from business and job seekers. We've got pages of performance measures, which we'd be glad to share. I guess what I would suggest is that some of the folks who are here can talk a little bit about their success.
But I guess my question is, we went through the 90s when unemployment rates was down very low.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the latter in the early 2000s, the unemployment rate was very high.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have the same number of employees, same budget?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, again, I'd have to give you a chart. In the early 90s, the department went through a huge layoff, And I think it was laid off about a quarter of the staff, something like that. This early session, or this early last few years, we have had to focus a lot of our employees on unemployment claims rather than on labor exchange activities, because the workload was so high and we were unable to add additional staff for the most part because of the caps that we have on state personnel. So it's a little hard to compare the economy with the number of staff we've had, though I'd be glad to go back and take a look at that and give you an idea of what those fluctuations have been. But this coming biennium, we are asking for about 100 fewer FTE than we've had in the 03-05 biennium, partly because we've changed the way we do unemployment insurance, pulled it out into three regionalized service centers. And we do unemployment insurance now by telephone and internet, which is a much more efficient and customer friendly way to do it. And so we've been able to save 100 FTE. So again, because of the fluctuations in the UI level and the fact that in the past we have moved people back and forth between UI and labor exchange, it's a little bit difficult to say exactly how many folks we've had doing which job over the several years.
Director Lincoln, we'll bring you back if we could, I'm sure that Representative Escobar has other questions. But we do have a number of other folks that want to testify, and so we'd like to hear from them, and then we'll continue to question and give you all the tough ways and means questions here and your ways and means hearings too. So, but thank you very much, and we'll remain somewhere close on deck, and we'll
be right back.
Get back with you. We'll now call on David Brightson and Lisa Tressel. You're up next. So, David?
Chairman Butler and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear today. For the record, my name is Dave Bradson. I own and operate a company called Ladari Enterprises based in Portland, Oregon. And I am also the state president for the Oregon Employer Council. For those of you that may not be familiar, the Oregon Employer Council is comprised of about 20 or a little over 20 chapters around the state, representing 1,200 businesses from the entire state. And with that, we have had the opportunity over the last few months to review and hear the presentation on this. At that time, it was a legislative concept, this House Bill 2127. We're here in support of that as an organization, using feedback from our membership with Debbie Lincoln and her staff. We see it as a way to reduce the cost of new businesses coming into the state because their initial unemployment rate would be lower, thereby saving capital for startup businesses and making us competitive with neighboring states. The existing business and the reduction of the cost for taxes, therefore, allows each of us to keep more of our money inside the business, growing staff members, et cetera. And from there, without any impact on the ability to pay claimants their due, is part of the fund that we have for many years have funded through these various tables that we move in and out of year to year. And we have and continue to support the structure of those tables in the state of Oregon because it doesn't allow for huge variations year to year, and I can be predictive in my business and knowing, okay, coming up I have this rate or either going up this amount or going down that amount year to year, and therefore allowing better planning, etc. With that, we're just here again to support. We like the structure of this. We think that it saves overall money for the business community. And with that, I'd be more than welcome to, or more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Brightson? Thank you very much, David. We appreciate your being here. Lisa Tressel is up next, and then Rob Diesel follows Ms. Tressel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Trussell with Associated Oregon Industries, and I'm very pleased to be here this afternoon with you. As you're probably aware, AOI doesn't frequently send me to the Revenue Committee to testify on bills. It's a pleasure that's reserved for Mr. Schweinhart. But I am here today on behalf of AOI and our members to testify in support of House Bill 2127. And we would like to commend the Employment Department, Debbie Lincoln, and her staff for bringing this proposal forward. UI taxes are frequently an issue of concern for AOI's members, and the steps that they've taken in this bill addresses two concerns of our membership. One concern is that the fund is adequately funded so that when we're in a tough economic time, like we saw most recently, you don't have huge tax increases. And because of the method of forward funding, we had tax increases, but they weren't as significant as other states had, and they were more of a stair step. And several years ago, I think it was 4 years ago, the legislature passed a bill that leveled out the 8 tax tables, and some of you will recall that. That was a significant step. This is a big step. And so, you know, the way that they've been able to calculate a new funding mechanism for the trust fund as far as how much money they need to forward fund, the fact we're still going to be measuring that, and we can reduce the employer tax base. The rounding issue is significant because that's frequently, my members with multi-state operations will frequently comment that, well, I pay for a lot more wages in Oregon than I do in some of the other states. But they're now recognizing that some of those other states where they operated in are now seeing significant increases because they weren't able to pay the claims during that tough time we've been through. And then the other things have been highlighted by your staff and Ms. Lincoln. And so we want to support this and urge your support of it. It cuts taxes, but it provides adequate funding for both the benefits and the agencies, gives us some stability and predictability, and we think it's the type of thing that we're asking state agencies to evaluate themselves on a regular basis. With that, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Are there questions of Ms. Trussell? Yes, Representative Riley.
Thank you. So what I understood you to say is that many of the businesses that you represent or talk with had in the past felt that our employment taxes were too high here, but because of the unfortunate economic situation in the last few years, they've changed their minds. Is that?
Well, I think that what's happened most recently, there was a concern that we were paying more than they were in other states,
mm-hmm.
And not understanding how we did the forward funding and the ramifications of paying as you go. If you pay as you go, then you're going to have a huge tax increase at a point in time when you can least afford it. And so there are advantages and disadvantages, but it's my understanding, and it was before my time, AOI was very involved when we set up this benefit reserve fund as a good way to do it, and it served its purpose well. But now, building it into the tax rate and being able to change the formula and reduce the taxes is something that my membership would be very pleased with.
Follow-up, Representative Rennie.
But I still didn't hear you say those same businesses that felt we were too high in the past, what do they say now? Are we still higher than other states, and do they feel that we're too high? Or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I haven't asked that question, but I think that what I have gotten, the feedback I've gotten on this proposal that we were made aware of in the fall, I think it was, is that it was definitely a step in the right direction, and it's something they can support.
Thank you. We'll appreciate it, Lisa. We'll have Rob Diesel, and then Glenn Harvey is up next, following Rob.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Rob Diesel, and I'm the Corporate Accounts Manager for Adventist Medical Center's Occupational Health Program, and I'm also the Chairman of the Gresham Area Employer Council in the East County of Multnomah County. I appreciate the opportunity as well to to testify in support of House Bill 2127, and I've prepared a little written statement that you have in front of you, and I was just going to read off of that, if that's okay. I'm writing it to you on behalf of the Gresham Chapter of the Oregon Employer Council to support the passage of House Bill 2127. I represent 10 private sector board members from the Gresham area who work in coordination with the Oregon Employment Department's Gresham Field Office. We are citizen advisors to the general operations of the Business and Employment Services and sponsor educational seminars for hundreds of employers on a wide range of business and workforce-related topics. The primary reason that the Gresham area Employer Council supports the passage of this legislation is simple. It will reduce payroll taxes for Oregon businesses by approximately $200 million between 2006 and 2009. In addition to saving Oregon businesses millions of dollars, this legislation stabilizes the Supplemental Employment Department Administration Fund, as mentioned before, CDAF. This fund supports two-thirds of the Employment Department's BANES programs, which are critical to the Employment Department for assisting employers and job seekers in Oregon. The Gresham Field Office alone placed 2,309 people in jobs during the program year 2003. The entire state agency placed well over 40,000 people in jobs during the same time period. These are promising results during an economic downturn that lead to improving the economic health of our state. It is refreshing to see a state agency deliver on the promises of establishing Oregon as a pro-business state. The Employment Department's proposal, House Bill 2127, will reduce unemployment insurance taxes by 12%, which will help recruit new businesses to Oregon and save existing Oregon businesses approximately $200 million. Additionally, it will stabilize the funding of services and businesses and job seekers, a vital component to the reinvestment in Oregon's economic future. For these reasons, the Gresham Chapter of the Oregon Employer Council strongly endorses and supports the passage of House Bill 2127 by the 2005 Legislative Assembly. And I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have of me as well.
Are there questions? Rob?
Thank you, folks.
Excuse me. Thank you very much. And Gwen Harvey next, and then Bridget Flanagan is following.
Good afternoon, Chair Butler and members of the committee. I'm pleased to be with you today, and thank you for the opportunity to speak before you. My name is Gwen Harvey. I'm a business professional. I have about a 30-year career, primarily in the technology industry as a human resource executive. So that's the job that paid me for many, many years. I now do benefits and HR-type consulting in a private practice. And for my volunteer activities, I have a myriad of things I'm involved with, including chairing the Employment Advisory Council, which is a labor and business and public interest group that advises the Employment Department on policies and programs and services. I'm also the immediate past state president of the Employer Oregon Employer Council. You heard earlier from Mr. David Bryson, who's the current president of that organization. And I also chair for the governor the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, which is a policy board comprised, again, of business, labor, and public interest folks that advises the governor on workforce policy here in the state of Oregon. I come before you today to talk to speak in support of House Bill 2127. I also want to share with you that in my various volunteer activities, I have the opportunity to visit with business and labor folks from all around our state to talk with job seekers and those who are moving from one career on to another. So I hope I bring a broader voice to the subject today by virtue of my contacts here in Oregon. We've heard a lot talked about with the CDAF fund, the Supplemental Employment Department Administrative Fund, and I've listened to several of your questions about, you know, what do we really do? What do we get for those dollars? How do they benefit the employer community? How do they benefit the citizens of the state? I want to share with you that, you know, when CDAF was originally set up, it was strongly supported by both business and labor here in the state of Oregon, and they continue to support that, and you've heard a little bit about that, like from AOI today, the means by which we developed that fund and how those dollars are used here in this state. I want to give you a couple examples to help you understand, you know, what do we get for those dollars? And these are real examples, stories I've heard, businesses I'm aware of, people I know that work in certain businesses. Many small businesses, of which Oregon has many, 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 many more small businesses than large businesses, use the employment department as an extension of their business, typically because they're not large enough to have a human resources staff. So they may have a hiring requirement, and what they'll do is they'll turn to their local field office and say, I need this type of person to do these kinds of things for me. This is what I can pay. These are the benefits I can offer. Can you help me find this person? The employment department staff will then help them develop what's called a job posting so it can be posted and the information made available to job seekers. They will help with doing initial screening of applicants to ensure that qualified applicants are referred to those businesses so that the business can then take to the next level of interviewing and determining whether a candidate fits or does not fit their need. So that's one example. And a recent event here in Oregon led we had a large telecommunications company operations here in Oregon. They were looking to expand their business. They looked both in Oregon and outside Oregon. They were going to be setting up a call center, and they made the determination to stay in Oregon, open a call center over in Central Oregon, and utilize the services of the employment department to assist them with job fairs, with doing initial screening of applicants, with helping them funnel information out to the labor force. They used labor market information to determine where the best location would be for setting up this call center in Oregon, and that they have nothing but absolutely wonderful things to say about their experience in working with the employment department on this large-scale project. So there's a couple of examples for you to talk about. You know, what do we get for those dollars? They benefit business, and they benefit job seekers. One of the tougher things with the business community is finding qualified applicants. The employment department has a new tool that we're using. It's called iMatch Skills, and that's a tool to help job seekers identify their skills, those that they have strong skills, you know, where their skills are strong, those places where they may either need to develop skills or enhance skills they have. It's also a place for businesses to go out and look and see, and they can utilize that tool as well, too, to say, you know, what do I'm going to give you an example. If I have a call center operator, what are the typical skills I would look for in a call center operator? You know, am I competitive with the folks I'm competing with here in the state? You know, I'm looking for the right skill set. Am I, you know, those kinds of things. So that's a newer tool that we have available both to job seekers and business that is going very well.
So, and Brennan, in some states or in other states, they don't provide that service. That's unique to Oregon?
I don't know that it's absolutely unique to Oregon, but I can tell you Oregon's getting some great play about iMatch Skills.
Excellent.
And it's a tool that has the capability to be enhanced. So as we move forward into the future, we have new types of jobs that come into our state. Our jobs are continually changing. That tool can be updated, so it remains relevant, too. So it's not just we create it once, it's used for one purpose, then we put it away and we start over. So it's like modular in nature. So using tools like iMatch Skills, working with staff in the local field offices from the business perspective to help identify qualified job applicants for open positions is a key function of the employment department. I think that it's important that we look at how we can ensure to the greatest extent possible continuous funding to be able to do that. You've heard several people reference the Wagner-Peiser funding, which has remained flat for a long time. And we, you know, other states, the services they provide are so limited that people stay on unemployment longer. They don't know where to go to seek services, and they can't make a connection to help them find employment or other services as well that they might need beyond just a job, daycare. They might have drug and alcohol problems, counseling. So the employment department is an extension in that regard, too, because they're part of what we call WorkSource Oregon, which is part of the work around the Workforce Investment Act, which is some of the work I do with the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. The employment department, I appreciate Debbie Lincoln's direct approach to her work. I want to just mention to you the mission of the employment department is to support business and promote employment. Very simply stated, but we have, you know, it has a huge impact on us here. And if we truly are turning the corner on this downturn and looking to a brighter future, we have to maintain this strategic investment in employment services here in Oregon. So one, we can retain businesses. Two, we can help existing businesses grow. And three, we can attract new businesses to our state to help improve our economy for the future. So again, thank you for your time today. I'd be happy to answer any additional questions.
Are there questions for Ms. Harvey? Thank you very much.
We
appreciate you being here. And then Bridget Flanagan and Mike Reed. Both wearing the same button, so I guess you're speaking to one another and coming forward.
Here we are. Mr. Chairman, excuse me, members of the committee, for the record, Gary Oxley, Oxley & Associates, appearing before you this afternoon with Bridget Flanagan, the Director of Government Affairs for Safeway Stores, and Mike Reed, the Vice President of Government Affairs for Winco. Mr. Reed is going to speak to the bill itself and the impact that this will have in the grocery industry. Obviously, the grocery industry is supportive of the bill, and Ms. Flanagan is going to speak directly to the CDAP program and the impact that that has had on Safeway and the reason that Safeway would like to see that program continue as well. So with that, I'll ask Mr. Reed to begin.
Thank you, Chairman Butler, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to meet before you today and to offer brief testimony. I didn't take the opportunity to submit written comments. Apologize for that, but perhaps my remarks can be helpful nonetheless. I am the Vice President of Public and Legal Affairs for Winco Foods. Though we're headquartered in Boise, Idaho, well over a third of our operating stores are in the state of Oregon. 16 of our 48 stores operate here. Better than two-thirds of our distribution operations are in the state of Oregon, with two out of our three distribution facilities also located within the state. We employ just shy of 3,000 people in the state of Oregon. And we've looked at this bill, and we are here to testify in support of House Bill 2127. It's rare that I have the opportunity to sit before a committee in any of the five states where we operate and talk about what a great thing it would be to get a reduction in our taxes. Typically, we're trying to fight increases in fees and taxes every time we turn around. So we applaud the state and the department for being responsible, for looking to an opportunity to return, if you will, some of the surplus by way of a reduction in the tax. A 12% reduction in tax is really quite significant, even to a modest business such as ours. I looked at last year's numbers, and for the fiscal year last year, we paid just over $912,000 in unemployment tax to the state of Oregon. And so far, year to date, we're nearly that number again, so we'll be probably just over $1 million this year. A 12% reduction, obviously, is going to represent roughly $120,000. That may not seem like a large amount of money, but looked at a different way, the grocery industry on the average has a net margin of 1%. With a 1% net margin, $120,000 in savings in this state would represent the net profits on it about roughly $10 million in grocery sales. That is pretty significant. The savings can be used in turn for expansion of our business within the state. Every time we open a store, we create approximately 200 new jobs. Every time a new store opens, it creates somewhere between 4 and 8 new opportunities in our distribution facility. So it really is an opportunity for us to consider further growth as we reap more money than we would otherwise with the kind of savings that this bill would represent to us. As we understand it, the mechanism for funding is responsible. The fund will remain adequately funded to serve the needs of those who are unemployed in the state. We have not been a great user of the CDAP services, but when we do use them, we appreciate the fact that they exist, and we appreciate the assistance of the state in helping us to find employees from time to time and utilization of some of their other services. But we feel like this opportunity is simply too good to pass up. 12% is real dollars in an industry that struggles to make a profit, and we would appreciate your support. I'd stand for questions if there are any.
Mike, just one quick question. Mike, thank you very much for your testimony. We've heard that at the same time Oregon is decreasing its rate, Idaho is increasing its rate by about 12%, reducing benefits and services.
That is true. And we've also had quite a struggle with the state of Washington over the years. We had about an 8-year battle with the legislature up there to try to reduce their rates and put it on a more utilization-based formula. We've had some success, but because of troubles they had through the recession, they're trying to turn that around in the legislative body this year and raise our rates again. So again, this is a rare and unique opportunity that we hope you will support in committee, and we'll have the opportunity to get the bill passed on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Yes, Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Chair. Jack, if I recall correctly, Winco's employee-owned, but not?
Well, it is employee-owned. We are an employee stock ownership plan company. That is our pension trust. Mm-hmm. And through that trust, current or former employees own approximately 91% of the business.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, yes, Representative.
So what we're really talking about is one-third of your employees are going to benefit from this, roughly.
I guess that's an interesting way to look at it.
Okay. Thank you.
The Chair recognizes Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we pass this bill, are you considering moving your headquarters from Boise to Hillsboro?
I'd like to be able to tell you yes, but I think, honestly, the answer to that question, Representative Riley, is no.
They discovered that Ontario was much closer than Hillsboro.
Medford, the weather's better.
Other questions of Mr. Reed?
Yeah,
thank you. Bridget?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bridget Flanagan. I'm the Public Affairs Director for Safeway's Northwest Region. We operate 119 stores in this region. 103 of those are in Oregon, and a balance, or 17, are in Southwest Washington. I'm pleased to say that Safeway is Oregon's fourth largest employer, and the first Safeway stores ever to open, actually, under the Safeway banner were in the mid-1920s in Portland. And we're here today employing over 12,500 employees. And I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2127. Safeway truly values and appreciates the Employment Department's CDAF program and the services it offers to employers. And actually, we have benefited from those services. To illustrate, Safeway recently opened 7 new stores within the past 18 to 24 months. And the Employment Department was an active partner with Safeway in our search to hire good, solid employees to staff those stores. Thanks to the employees in the CDAF program, we were able to quickly hire good employees. In fact, it was averaged to be about 75 new employees per store. So times 7, that's about 525 new employees. The CDAF program specifically provided very valuable service to us that helped us to quickly do this task. First of all, they posted the jobs statewide, and that included in outlying areas where we were struggling to find applicants. As needed, they translated the job flyers into Spanish. They pre-screened the applicants based on our job criteria and needs. They provided interviewing rooms and training rooms on site. And then they scheduled the interview so that it was quick and easy for our employment reps to get down to the business at hand. Their staff consistently went above and beyond the call of duty. And any reduction in UI rates that Safeway would benefit from would be put back into our business and support our ability to hire Oregonians. Mr. Chairman, members of the community, I just close simply with our support of this bill. Thank you very much,
Bridget. Questions for Ms. Flanagan? Gary, are you ready to do a summary on behalf of the Oregon Grocers Association?
Mr. Chairman, I think that Winco and Safeway have spoken well to the bill and our reasons for support, and we would encourage the committee to pass this bill out to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't have anyone else signed up, but I know it's J.L. Wilson here, and J.L. probably brought a contingent with him. So, J.L.,
thank you, Chair Butler. I'll spare you the contingent today, just me. For the record, J.L. Wilson, representing the National Federation of Independent Business. I have 12,000 members statewide and wanted to register our support for the bill on the record. We do support the bill as is. One of the things that gets lost in the fanfare surrounding our successful comp system is that we have a pretty darn successful UI system, too. To answer Representative Riley's question, the rates we do consider a little higher than average. But we also understand the trade-off, and that is there's remarkable stability. The fund has been solvent and well-managed, and you basically get a pretty significant bang for your buck. Now, we kind of employ a four-way litmus test when it comes to unemployment proposals. The first of which, what does it do to employer rates? Obviously, $200 million to the tune of 12% reduction is brings us in line with other states in our estimation and is a very good thing. What does it do to stability and predictability of our rate structure? Obviously, it doesn't compromise that in any way. In terms of solvency, the bill obviously does not compromise solvency in any way. But the fourth litmus test really regards the integrity of the fund. One of the things about Oregon's fund is that it's free from intrusion. Employers get what they pay for, and that is something that we've always been concerned about. There has been some question about the CDAP appropriation in the bill. From our point of view, that is really not outside the scope of what employers pay that money into the UI fund for in the first place. So it answers our integrity question. Also, I had nothing to follow. I had a thought, but it just left me. Anyways, we support the bill in its current state. Would appreciate your support as well.
Thank you very much. Questions for JL? Thank you, JL. And we do have one other that is asked to be able to testify, and that's Patrick Allen from the Office of Regulatory Streamlining.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, just very briefly, Pat Allen, I manage the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. The office also supports this bill. It's one of the three dozen bills that we've identified as part of the state agencies' streamlining legislative package. The particular part I'd want to draw your attention to is the reduction in initial rates for employers, for new employers. As we've done regulatory streamlining over the last 2 years, one of the large emerging issues we're grappling with is the fact that the day you hire employee number one, you pick up 95% of the regulatory and tax burden that Intel or any other large employer has. It's a huge set of issues that you have to deal with as a very small business with a small number of employers, and we think that this reduction in first year rates is something that chips away at some of that burden. That's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Are there questions of Mr. Allen? Thank you. Thank you very much, Patrick. Colleagues, this concludes today's portion of the public testimony on House Bill 2127. I'm going to ask you to formulate any questions which you may have, again, relative to some work groups on the bill that we worked on yesterday, House Bill 2450, dealing with the high cost allocation for disability for high cost disabilities in school districts, as well as the small high school allocation. I would encourage my vice chairs to gather under your wings, please, members of the committee on your side of the table. Representative Berger?
My side of the table is scheduled at 2:30 today in Mr. Warner's office.
Not wasting any time. Thank you. And Paul, welcome back. It's good to have you back. Give us a report on NAS. Would you do that? We'll close the public hearing and we'll stay here in session. How's NAS doing?
Manson was home from the hospital today, this morning. He called in and said that they had given him some medication, and he was pretty groggy and tired from that. But he said it was only an inflammation. It was not an actual attack. So, for those of you who haven't heard Madison, I had to go into the hospital with chest pains on Sunday. So that's why this is, he would normally be here working on this. So hopefully we'll have him back next Monday.
I heard his voice over the telephone. I'm wondering where I could sign up for some of that medicine that you're giving. It sounds great.
Thank you.
Not quite yet. Huh? Okay. If there's nothing further, again, thank you, Representative Berger, for your work, and encourage Representative Hass to do the same. With that, we'll go ahead and close House Revenue Committee.